Chris Hannon joins me now. He's in studio. What are we listening to, Chris?
It's The Boston Rag by Steely Dan to welcome our visitors, the Boston Celtics, into town tonight.
So Chris is wearing a Green Bay Packers hat.
Yep.
What explains the Green Bay? Are you a Packers fan?
I'm a quasi-Packers fan. I don't live and die with sports teams, which I know is like a moral deficiency of mine. But
no, I actually think it's a relief. It must be a relief.
Yeah, and so I have sort of mixed allegiances, but when I went to college initially, many decades ago at this point, I developed dual allegiances to both the Vikings and Packers, which you're not supposed to have if you're from the area, but like I'm not from the area, and so like my roommate in college was a diehard Vikings fan who would like literally like throw bottles against the wall when Warren Moon would throw an interception or whatever. And then my best friend from college, who's still my best friend, is a Packers season ticket holder, born and raised in Superior, Wisconsin. And he has season tickets. And this weekend, when I'm back up there, he and I are going to go to the Packers Bengals game. So I got a hat so I can break it in.
So you're going to Lambeau.
Yeah, the hat's cheaper than getting like a jersey or a hoodie or whatever. And I can't. Right. I figure I can't go into the stadium without some Packers gear on my body.
And
I don't think that would be allowed.
You didn't think a wedge of cheese was the appropriate thing to have on your body?
I'll do the cap.
Have you been to Lambeau before?
No, the timing's never worked out until now.
Oh, that's terrific. What's the most that you ever have in the span of your days lived and died as a fan with a team?
Arkansas Razorback basketball, high school and college.
Right.
The Nolan Richardson era. Like, if any team in the history of sports was my team, it was the Nolan Richardson team. Arkansas Razorbacks.
Yeah. All right. Check in. How's your fantasy team doing? Since we're on the subject of football.
I'm on an upswing. I started 1-3, and now I'm up to 5-5, so I'm in the mix.
You're in the mix. Yeah. Who's performing well for you?
You know, no one has been blockbuster, but like my running backs have both underperformed but yet been good relative to
Saquon
the league.
Saquon Barkley's one of your running backs.
Yeah, he's underperforming, but it's a 16-team league. So I have him and Kieran Williams and Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt, who had a good game last weekend. And Davante Adams has probably been my best player relative to expectation.
Yeah. All right. Celtics in town. Before we discuss the Grizzlies, what do you make of the Celtics this year?
You know, I was thinking about that this morning because I was looking at the whole league a little bit. And the front office is definitely treating this like a gap year.
Right.
But they've got Jaylen Brown and Derek White, who are two-way, big-time winning players on the perimeter. And they have a coach in Joe Mazzulla who has no chill.
Right.
And there's all these hints of, like, you know, Jason Tatum might reappear late in the season. He might jump out of the phone booth with the cape on and blah, blah, blah. The problem is their front court has been so hollowed out that even if Mazzulla and Derek White and Jaylen Brown are here for it and Tatum, like, makes a heroic return, like, is not good enough. And I don't think it's going to get good enough because I think they're going to try to shed more salary, not add salary. And so I think it'll be a humdrum 40-win play-in team.
There's
know?
No Porzingis. There's no...
No Al Horford. No Luke Kornet. Like, everyone's
no Luke
gone.
Kornet.
Everyone's
yeah.
gone. And it's like, it is total... The front court depth chart of the Boston Celtics this season is 100% expansion team. It's like guys you've never heard of. It's Luka Garza and Namus Queta, and it's Chris Boucher. It's a total expansion team front court.
Well, it should be a good test for the Grizzlies tonight.
Right, right, right.
Should be a good test for the Grizzlies tonight because they're going to be throwing up. What's the long term in the gap year? Like, are they creating? What's the long term plan?
Well, they're trying to dip down. I think they're going to try to dip down under the tax itself if they can, right. And like, you know, halt that repeater, you know, thing. And so, I mean, they'll come back next year presumably with Tatum, Brown, Derek White, Peyton Pritchard, and like that's a real strong core. It's a championship
right.
core, but you got to do something in the front court, and I'm not sure where that comes from, you know. And so that will be a trick for them. They do have the Anthony Simons as a player, but they also have that contract that maybe, you know, they could attach some draft picks to and do something with.
Right.
I don't know.
All right. So tonight it's another game, another chance to watch Cedric Coward. It'll be interesting. I imagine it'll be the same starting lineup, but as you pointed out, it could be Scottie Pippen Jr. instead. Like that'll maybe be interesting.
Yeah,
it'll
be interesting to see if he's looking to like experiment with lineups or if he's like we're trying to get rhythm with what we're trying to do. One of the things about the first game, Javon Small was not available apparently for some kind of personal reasons. I think he's expected to be back for tonight's game. One of the things about game one that I think did not look like what I expect in the regular season is I don't think they ever played Ty Jerome and Scottie Pippen together. With Morant and Small out, they sort of alternated those guys as the point guard. Maybe if Small is back and they're getting him some minutes, maybe we'll see some Jerome Pippen backcourts, because I do think they want to feature that as a combo in the regular season.
And how do you think it works?
I think it could work great. Jerome is a more skilled on-ball operator, pick-and-roll playmaker. Pippen is a much better on-ball defender, so you can shift. If Pippen's there, he can guard, you know, the lead guard, and you can shift. It's easier to hide Ty Jerome defensively with Pippen there. And I think Pippen, you know, it's a good shooter off ball, and I think that could work really well together. Yeah.
How much do you think we're going to see Ja and Jerome? A lot?
Maybe.
Pretty
sieve-like. That creates a lot of defensive problems, but if you have Ja Morant, Ty Jerome as your backcourt, and you're playing them with, say, Jaren Jackson Jr., Jalen Wells and KCP in a small lineup, or Brandon Clark's back later in the season. There are lineups you can construct that would give that backcourt a lot of support. And so we'll see. I think they will play together. I think they're both too important to never see the floor together.
Right. I read your piece. Chris has a piece up, and it's about the bigs, really, and a lot of things that we talked about yesterday. But you did mention the parlor game. That is, who's going to be the Grizzlies' leading scorer? Third leading scorer. I'm sorry. Yeah, who's going to be the Grizzlies' third leading scorer? Who is going to be the Grizzlies'? How many possibilities are there for third leading scorer?
Oh, I think the most likely possibilities are Santi Aldama and Ty Jerome. Now, Edie is a little bit of a wild card in that. Are we putting a games played qualification on it? That's a question, you know. And he didn't really score a lot after he rebounded a lot. He didn't score a lot after the coaching change. But I think the idea is for him to be a scorer. I mean, he's 7'4", and Ja's throwing the, you know. And so he could be in the mix, too. Those are all guys I think you could see there in the mid-teens, points per game. Coward obviously is a wild card, but Coward might just not play. You know, I mean, he's a rookie, so who knows. But I think the path is clearest for Santi Aldama, because there's less competition. Right, there's going to be plenty of minutes and touches and shot attempts for Santi. There's not a lot of competition for him to be on the floor. They're going to need him on the floor a lot.
Right. It's not going to be KCP. He wouldn't even be unlikely.
I mean, that, I can see a situation where you just got like four guys averaging between 12 and 14
Jalen
points,
Wells,
you know, and he's
too,
and,
right?
he yeah. ends up at 13.7, and he's your third leading scorer. I mean, that's possible.
That's sort of a separate question. Who's going to be your third leading scorer? And who is your third best player, or who is your third most valuable chip, which might be the lottery pick, right?
By April, that needs to be Zach Edie.
Edie needs to be your third best player.
Yes. Third most important, third most impactful, important. Meaningful, however you want to say it. He needs to be the third guy in the pecking order by the end of the season for the Grizzlies to be what they want to be.
Ultimately, should Cedric Coward be more important than Zach Edey?
We got to tap the brakes.
Right.
We're just in a rush.
He wasn't even drafted as high.
He was the 11th pick.
He wasn't drafted as high as Zach Edey was, and he,
So what are we doing? Let's just tap the brakes. And also the whole, I've already seen lots of stuff like, if he's not awesome, the Bane trade, he wasn't even the main thing that came back in the Bane trade. The main thing that came back in the Bane trade is a pick that has not been exercised yet. And so the idea of, like, are you going to get a star out of the Bane trade? Coward isn't even the most likely person to be that.
Right.
That's the pick that's still coming. And so, like, we'll see what happens with Cedric Coward.
Right. Now, the only point I've made isn't, in fact, that is the most visible current piece from the Bane trade, and so people will rush to judge it. Not that it is the most valuable, but yes, it is the part that we'll be able to see and say, and no one will acknowledge that, you know, some of these other pieces, KCP, Ty Jerome, might not have had, like, all these things came sort of maybe by fallout.
The Jerome didn't. That was a free agency exception they would have had either way.
Right. But would they have done it? Would he have come? We don't
maybe,
know.
Maybe, maybe
anyway,
not.
So, but yeah, it is, and that is what's going to happen to Cedric Coward, though. People are going to, like, oh, he's a bust. I mean, they're, you know, whatever.
Well, that's fine. People can say, I don't care. People are always talking. What the people say. I'm just trying to deal with what I perceive as reality.
Well, you just said he may not play. I don't really believe that.
I don't mean like literally, like, at all. I mean
meaningfully rotation. Don't you think
he may not be averaging 25 minutes a game? He may be averaging
12.
Nine.
Okay.
I don't know. It just depends on how it goes.
I think that's very possible. He would be averaging 9, yeah, 12, I think
if they're going to play a 10 to 12 man rotation, which I think they might do, I think he's going to be in it because they're going to want to bring him along. But I don't think they're going to be in a situation where they're going to force feed him, you know, starter level or high rotation level minutes if he has not earned them. And like, I don't think they're in that much of a rush to like, we got to make sure this looks good. Let's give him 27 right. minutes.
I'm sure they're not thinking we have to make sure it looks good.
Right.
I'm sure they're not thinking that. It is interesting the contrast between Cedric Howard this year and Jalen Wells last year. Like they said last year, well, Jalen Wells, you know, we didn't expect him to burst his way into the lineup.
Yeah, he was the 37th pick in the draft.
Yes. But the truth of the matter is it wasn't just that like he was so great. It's that everyone else crapped out, right? There was nothing in front of him.
Like, this is the
there
thing.
Went Marcus Smart and Gigi was no good and Vince was hurt and whatever. Like, and with Coward, there's a lot of options.
If Ja Morant, Ty Jerome, Scottie Pippen, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Jalen Wells, that's five guys on a perimeter. That could be the end of your rotation for most teams.
Right.
If all of those guys are healthy and playing well, like you're scrambling for minutes, not only for Coward, but for Vince Williams and for Gigi Jackson 100%. And like in all of that.
Yeah. I think the opportunity is just very different this year than it was last year for Jalen Wells. Yeah, he played well, but the opportunity was one that no one expected him to have. And it was honestly because they only whiffed on, partly because of injury and partly because they whiffed on Marcus Smart.
Well, and then the Vince Williams injury.
And the Vince Williams injury, yeah. All right. Movies. The film is Roof Man.
Yeah, it might be interesting. We'll see. It's sort of a little bit of a light week. If you've not seen One Battle After Another, get to that before it leaves theaters. Treat yourself. Go see it twice like I did.
Did you? What did you think the second time?
Oh, it was great. It was better the second time. Much better. I mean, I liked it better the next morning after I saw it the first time than I did leaving the theater that night. Sort of a lot to process. The middle section of that movie just... it just levitates. It's great. Roofman is sort of a crime caper comedy thing based on a true story starring Channing Tatum. It's about a guy who, former military guy, single dad, down on his luck, who started breaking into McDonald's like by cutting holes in the roof and dropping in and like ripping off McDonald's and then got arrested and like went to jail. And for some reason, I don't know all the plot. I try not to, but ended up getting out of jail and like breaking into a Toys R Us and just living there undetected for a while. So it's based on that story, and it's Channing Tatum and Kirsten Dunst and what's his name from Game of Thrones, Tyrion Lannister. Help me out,
Peter Dinklage.
All kinds of interesting people in the cast, and it's directed by this guy Derek Cianfrance, who's did a couple of interesting movies that they're kind of downer. Dramas, yeah. Blue Valentine and The Place Beyond the Pines with Ryan Gosling. This is a different kind of movie for him. It's gotten some pretty good early reviews, so I'm interested in it.
It's funny that I only scanned the piece. It was about Channing Tatum feeling like he's had imposter syndrome until this serious movie that is allowing, not serious, whatever, this movie is an opportunity for...
I guess that's a good PR angle for him. I don't
whatever.
Know.
That's what... And I don't know if it was working with this director that separated it, but okay. Other things, Kiss of the Spider Woman. I saw this in the 1980s.
Did you? This is a movie you've seen that I haven't.
Whoa!
There we go. We found one.
Mark it down, ladies and gentlemen. I didn't know we needed a remake of it, though. Was William Hurt in it?
Yeah, we'd already established The Sound of Music, so there's two.
Yeah, there's two now.
Yeah, William Hurt and Raul Julia and Sonia Braga. I'm very familiar with it. I've just never seen it. But this is a very modern thing that happens where, like, people do Broadway adaptations, usually musicals of movies that weren't musicals to begin with, and then the Broadway thing becomes a hit, so now you make a movie adaptation of the Broadway musical that is an adaptation of the movie, and that's what's happening.
That's what's happening here.
I can't bring myself to be at all interested in this, but maybe you are out there.
No, not. I actually kind of surprised. I meant, kind of surprised I went to see it the first time.
I meant the listening world. I'm sure there are people out there who want to see that.
The 25th anniversary of Battle Royale.
Woo! I can't believe that is actually going to show like in a Malco Theater in Memphis, Tennessee on a Sunday, no less. Battle Royale is a Japanese movie, like a cult movie. I rented it on DVD 20 years ago from Black Lodge Video when it was on Cooper Young. Shout out to those guys if they're still out there. Matt, I think, is still out in Memphis somewhere. And it's a notorious movie. And it's also, when The Hunger Games came out, many years later, who know, I don't even know if the person who wrote that has acknowledged that they were ripping off Battle Royale, but they got accused of ripping off Battle Royale. Battle Royale is a dystopian Japanese movie in a sort of a totalitarian near future where the government kidnaps a classroom full of ninth graders and forces them to fight to the death until only one remains.
That's a lot like Hunger Games.
It's 100%.
That's a lot like Hunger Games. And then Ferris Bueller, is that tonight? Where's the
today's Wednesday, so that's tomorrow.
Tomorrow, man. I'm sorry. It's tomorrow night.
Yep.
It's the
at Studio in the Square, they're doing these Throwback Thursdays showing some good older movies. Not that old. Some people think the 80s are old movies. To me, old movies, you have to go back to the 50s, but that's me.
You're a fan. You think the sister, underrated role.
I think it's a great character played by Jennifer Grey of Dirty Dancing fame. I would like to have seen like an alternate version of the movie from her perspective. You get a little bit of that in there, but I think that would have been good. She's very put upon. She is not amused by her brother, even though he is one righteous dude.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We'll talk to Sam Hardiman on the other side. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. This is painful. I got to talk to Sam Hardiman, whose Pats beat my Bills this past Sunday. Sam, congratulations.
Thank you. I mean, you managed to sound more grudging than your text the next morning.
I don't think my crud. I thought my text, there was no nuance in it. It just said congrats, exclamation point. And then I actually conceded, which I do believe. This is what I think that we were talking to Chris, who proudly is not a sports fan. And I wish I weren't, but because in some, it's so painful. But I really think in some ways, the very best chapter of sports fandom is when your team is starting to put it together, when the future looks, I mean, for you, it's obviously multiple Super Bowls. So when I'm being silly here, but for those of us who've never seen that kind of triumph, the best part of fandom is when you're just embarked on the way up and you can see a bright and glorious future before it all comes crashing down. And for y'all, you'll start to look at this like, yeah, we got the pieces. Drake May looks like he's the guy. We got a left tackle. We got like, isn't this in fact one of the safest places to be as a sports fan?
Oh, absolutely, Jeff. Like it was on Sunday night. My home group chats, all my New England group chats, they started, you know, very pessimistic, like, are we about to get blown out on Sunday Night Football? This might not be fun. And then at halftime, like, there was a text from my friend Connor, who's probably the biggest fan among us, who's like, do we dare believe? And then by the end, it was like jubilation. And, like, there was this, to your point about, like, the pieces, right? Like, Will Campbell was really good on Sunday night, really, really good against good pass rushers. And, you know, Christian Gonzalez had big plays. And obviously, Drake May looks like a guy. He looks like the dude. Like, a couple weeks ago, you know, Jeffrey, you know, when you weren't here, it's like, did we anoint Drake May too soon? You know, he was Mr. Anti-Drake May a few weeks ago. And so, yeah, right now there is hope. There is, you know, it's blossoming. And, yeah, I feel good. But there's also, like, low expectations.
That's
like, I'm a little worried this.
It's a free swing. It's only good. Yeah. It's perfect. It's where the Grizzlies were when John Jaren were 20, right? I mean, it's,
right.
You know, Jeffrey, were you anti-Drake Bray? Were you Mr. Anti-Drake?
No, it was more like the Simmons narrative that, like, he's awesome. And he played, the second half was darn near perfect football from him. Like, he was incredible. But a lot of it has been, hey, man, he had a couple of good drives in the first half and then get blown out in the second half. Everybody's like, look at how great Drake May is.
Well, that was good. Anyway, it was. And the nice thing is, honestly, from the Bills' perspective, it wasn't that demoralizing a loss. Like as losses go, it was. You turn the ball over three times, right? And okay, that's fine. Teams lose games. The Eagles lost a game. Like you're not the Ravens. You're not right now. You're better position than the Chiefs. And the truth of the matter is, I've always thought they were flawed. Okay, onward to. To the city of Memphis. A couple stories recently, Sam. Obviously, a lot going on in the city of Memphis. So yesterday you had the piece that C.J. Davis, I gather, was talking to Memphis City Council and said, the way she described it, as the city has more than 700 visitors in town? Visitors?
Yeah, that's how she described our the federal Memphis State Task Force. I think she may be also describing the Tennessee Highway Patrol as well. But, yeah, she describes the Memphis City Council as, you know, when there are 700 visitors, it is difficult to direct all of them, but we're trying to. And then an MPD spokesperson sitting in the back of the room told me and Shay Arthur of WREG that, you know, as of Monday, it was about 889, but the number is sort of fluctuating around 700 per day of federal, state, local law enforcement. Well, not local, federal and state law enforcement that are here in Memphis as part of the Memphis State Task Force, and they are definitely doing work.
You said something, it's hard to direct them. Is she directing them? Is Memphis Police directing them? Do we have a clear understanding of the how this is working?
Yeah, so there is definitely some direction from the Memphis Police Department. I can't and I don't have visibility into what command and control really looks like, but what I can see from affidavits, because me and my colleagues at the Daily Memphian have been reading dozens of these affidavits. I get off this phone, I'll probably go read some more.
Yeah.
There is real collaboration between federal and state local law enforcement. You know, there are at times, you know, federal law enforcement in the car with MPD. Okay. And it's an MPD squad car that's making arrests, but the federal agents are also interacting with these people. The thing I want to point out from Chief Davis's comments is one of the things that they are really trying to direct is, there's these positions called analysts, and essentially they're researchers. They're not probably doing stuff that is much different from what I do, except they have access to more information and they have the power of the law on their side. They are looking up gang members. They are trying to, as Davis put it to the Memphis City Council, find the people who are responsible for many crimes, right? The people that are going to be directing, you know, gang operations, stuff like that. And they are trying to understand who these people are and give the city better data and better intelligence as to how to go after those people. Because, as the chief put it, if there's going to be a sustainable reduction in crime, it is those people that need to be taken off the street.
Okay, I want to get to the affidavits, and I want to get to explore that topic of who's being taken off the street here in a moment. But before I do that, just a couple of questions about clarification. Of these 800-plus people who are in town, do we know who they are, or do we know, like, it's a mix of agencies, and it is not yet the National Guard, but literally could be coming as soon as Friday? Is that correct?
Yeah, I'll take the National Guard part of that first. Yeah, the National Guard is here in the sense of there are some commanders here logistically planning the deployment, okay, according to Chief Davis. And from what we've heard as well, that in you know, through our reporting, they're here, they're working on logistics. The actual large-scale deployments aren't happening yet. She expects that as soon as Friday, Chief Davis does. The second part of this is we don't have, and we need to maybe do a better job of getting hard numbers from each of these agencies that are part of this task force. There are 13 federal alphabet soup agencies that are part of this task force. We don't know, for example, if there are 25 or 50 from one agency or another. We don't have that breakdown. What we can see in the affidavits is there's clearly DEA, ATF, U.S. Marshals, FBI, active on the ground in Memphis, Tennessee as part of this task force. That is very clear from the paper trail that these arrest affidavits are showing.
Clarity on what the National Guard will or won't be asked to do?
Again, I'll return to Chief Davis's comments, and she has said this multiple times, and she said it again yesterday. It is likely not to be traditional law enforcement matters in terms of investigations, detaining people, making, you know, traffic stops, arrests, but much more of, she said, the deterrent effect. And what that likely means, and she noted again, downtown assets as well, that you may see potentially some National Guard folks wandering around downtown Memphis on Grizzlies or Tigers game nights. That is a possibility. That you may see them in retail corridors, meaning, you know, are you in Overton Square or somewhere else, you know, that people are highly trafficked, and the idea would be there are people in uniform designed to deter bad actors from doing things they shouldn't do.
All right. Now, to the and again, people can read these pieces at the Daily Memphian. Sam and Lydia Williams did the piece that I'm about to talk about what you're discovering from looking at the from looking at these affidavits. So explain to me what you are doing and explain to me what you are seeing.
Yeah, absolutely. To be completely transparent for people every day, and I haven't done it yet this morning, I need to do it. Thanks for reminding me, Jeff, is there is a jail log of people who are in Shelby County Jail, aka 201 Poplar. Every day we are pulling that jail log, filtering it by arresting agency and day, because there are people currently in the jail that have been in the jail for years. We don't need to know about them. And we are looking at the new arrests, and then we are picking a crime or a arresting agency, and we are going through the Shelby County Criminal Justice Portal, which is a place anyone in the public can access. You just need a login. It takes 10 minutes to sign up and get a login, completely free, and pulling arrest affidavits for these arrests. Okay. And so what we're doing is Lydia and I, and Lydia's our great intern who went to the University of Missouri, my alma mater, MIZ. And we went through and we started looking at different arrests. She started looking at car chases, marijuana possession, because that's something we've seen quite frequently in the arrests, particularly arrests from the Tennessee Highway Patrol, is a lot of marijuana possession. I started looking at unlawful possession of firearms, which is interesting to me, given that we are an open carry state. There are, you know, limited instances where a firearm's illegal, and it seems that those instances are happening. And so then that is just giving us, by looking for those crimes and then pulling the affidavits, it's giving us a window that is not a complete picture, but a snapshot into what we're seeing federal and state law enforcement doing.
Are there, again, people can read the piece about the sorts of crimes that are being charged here. Are there any, I mean, you mentioned the gang members. Are there any, have you discovered any arrests for, like, and with all due respect, weed isn't, you know, hell, it's legal in how many states? Like, and so are you discovering arrests of bad guys, you know, like really bad guys?
Yeah, there are certainly some folks that another thing to point out here is a lot of the work we're seeing is existing warrants. And warrant pickups. So if somebody has, you know, felony warrants for their arrest and local law enforcement haven't gotten to them yet to pick them up, take them to jail, that's what the feds are doing. And a lot of the time they're doing this in coordination with the MPD, particularly the Memphis Police Department's Organized Crime Unit. So yes, absolutely. There are some folks who are accused and have been convicted of bad things getting picked up here. And absolutely, that's happening. We are also seeing a lot of people who are making errors driving, okay? Not yielding to stop signs, not putting their blinkers on, driving with expired tags. And then they're getting pulled over, and it turns out they have a felony record and they have a gun in the car. Well, you can't own a gun and have a felony or possess a gun and be a felony. And so that's a lot of the unlawful possession of firearms that I found, right? And so it's a mixture of both. There is a lot of really heavy enforcement of low-level offenses that is leading to higher charges because these people, are apparently, according to these affidavits, have committed these crimes upon discovery of them. And then there are a lot of people being picked up for outstanding warrants that, you know, could certainly be described, given their criminal history, as, quote, bad actors that have, you know, not up to not good things. Or at one point were.
And do we know, by the way, so they're going to appear on the jail log, whether they're charged with federal charges, state charges, whatever. Is that right?
They're appearing in the jail log with state charges. What we're seeing a lot of the time is, you know, I, for example, read about one arrest where someone was transported for questioning by FBI agents, okay, after they were picked up. And FBI declined to, you know, find some federal charges, so they were booked on state charges. And so there seems to be this, like, really, like I said, heavy collaboration of a lot of what we're seeing in the jail is state charges. There is going to be some federal. We're also trying to watch where the federal charges are going to be, because the Department of Justice and AG Pam Bondi, they've been putting out tweets every day. They've been putting out statements every day about arrests and illegal guns off the street. We in the media have really struggled to reconcile the number of arrests they're talking about with what we're seeing in the jail log. It's not really clear how the two match up at all.
They're not transparent on this topic
at this time, and that right. could change. And
Do we have any sense, by the way, what ICE is up to? Like, if ICE spirits someone off, you know, whatever, off the streets, and they're not showing up in a jail log, right? So do we know have any greater sense of what ICE is up to and whether there is a greater presence? Certainly, anecdotally, I hear much more about ICE being in town, but I don't, that wouldn't show up in the jail log. That's not where these folks would appear.
Likely not. I really don't have enough information to say. What we can say is, like you said, Jeff, anecdotally, there appears to be a lot more ICE activity for sure. But I don't feel comfortable right. weighing in on that.
And then finally, because this was part of Chief Davis's presentation yesterday, I gather, she did reiterate that before this, crime is down. Is that that part of what she said?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what she began her remarks with. And then she, you know, weighed into the, what is everyone's mind, the federal task force. And yeah, crime is down. I may have the number slightly wrong here, but a year ago at this time, Memphis was sitting on about 201 homicides. And according to MPD's data, and it's very hard to fake homicides not happening, right. so probably very accurate, and Memphis is sitting on 146 homicides. Every loss of life is tragic. Like, at the same time, that is a marked decrease in homicides. You know, and this is through the first 9 months of 2025 compared to the first 9 months of 2024. So there is time for things to change or time for things to get better. But crime is down. The incidences of aggravated assault are down significantly as well. So these are murder and aggravated assaults, right, are two really big violent crimes. Two giant buckets that drive the city's crime rate.
Just to give people the numbers, again, I'm reading from the story. You can read it at Daily Memphian. The first 9 months of 2024, 5,826. The same period this year, 4,746. I've seen a couple stories, Sam, where you include MPD does not measure aggravated assaults the same way as the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation. Is that because the Tennessee Bureau of that they reflect a different trend or something? Is there...
Yeah, I'll make this pretty simple for people. So what MPD measures is the number of incidences of an aggravated assault.
Yeah.
Okay. And so if somebody, say, shoots at two people, doesn't wound them, but it's an act of aggravated assault, that is one aggravated assault the way MPD counts it. However, there were two alleged victims of aggravated assault. TBI will count the number of victims of aggravated assault for the city of Memphis. Okay. And so that is how they measure it. And to be clear, MPD is the one that reports the number of victims to TBI, and then TBI reports right. it out. And it is just what is factored into Memphis's crime rate, the national crime rate, that is the apples to apples per 100K that every city is reflected, is the number of victims of aggravated assault, not what MPD reports to the city council and on its dashboard, which is the number of instances of aggravated assault.
I got it. You can read all this at the Daily Memphian. Sam, thanks so much for your good work and for coming on. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jeff. I'm sorry for my grudging comments.
From the Daily Memphian, if you're looking for a new financial institution, Leaders Credit Union is the place where I sent Claire, where she sent her sons, and therefore, pretty obviously, it's the place I would recommend to you. They've got a brand new Arlington branch. They have a branch in Bartlett. That's the one that we went to. But you can just download the app, honestly, and you'll see what I'm talking about. It's incredibly easy to use because they put every penny back into what they do, because they don't have stockholders they have to keep happy. You'll see. It's got great rates, got great service, got great technology. They're not nickel and diming you. I couldn't be more pleased. So whether you're looking for a car loan, a home loan, or just fed up with your bank, or you know someone who's moving to town and thinking of setting up a bank account, Leaders Credit Union. leaderscu.com/ESPN. Going to take a break. Back in a moment. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. Want to tell you about ProHealth. Where do you go if you're feeling poorly? And the answer should be ProHealth, whether it's you need a vitamin B12 shot, whether you need your allergy shots, whether it's sick visits, whether it's testosterone replacement, and they do weight loss too. I mean, that's the truth of the matter is, I was talking to people this recently. You hear about all the weight loss stuff. Well, over at ProHealth, you can lose weight without starving, running marathons, do any of that. It's not a juice cleanse. It's nothing. It's a weight loss shot, semaglutide, which can help curb your appetite, help you lose those extra pounds. And they check in on you, too. It's not just one shot. They will check any other's accountability. But again, a whole range of services at ProHealth. And so if you are feeling poorly and look to be a better version of you, they've got locations in Germantown, Collierville, Bartlett, and they've got two in East Memphis. You can check out the range of services yourself by going to ProHealthMemphis.com. Feel better fast. Jeffrey, a couple things I did want to discuss with you. We don't talk a lot about hockey here, and we won't now, but Connor McDavid, a week after Kirill Kaprizov, who none of you have heard of, took $17 million to play for the Minnesota Wild. Connor McDavid, McJesus, as he's called in NHL circles. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be heretical here. But he took $12.5 million to continue playing for
with
the Edmonton.
With Canadian taxes.
To live in Edmonton.
Yes.
To live in Edmonton. And he did it because he wants to win. There's a cap in the NHL, and he wants to win. So I asked you the question, if you were in this position, can you imagine circumstances under which you would take less money to win?
Yes.
What would those be?
Number one, if I'm a quarterback or if I'm in the McDavid category. If I'm getting basically, if my career is going to be judged by whether or not I win championships, and I think you also have to have this factor in. I have to have faith that the people that are making decisions and building the roster, if I give them the pay cut, that they're going to do something with it.
But I think the key distinction you made right there is,
what are you judged on?
Is if you are someone who's going to be judged by titles, that's when you do this. And even then, lots of people don't. LeBron is judged by titles, but he's never done this.
Correct.
He gets other people to take less money.
Yes, right? Very heroic.
But the only circumstances under which you do it is if you're no Connor McDavid, you are so great that your legacy is going to be judged by titles. Kirill Kaprizov, also excellent, unbelievable player. He is never going to be, quote-unquote, judged by titles. He's just not in that category. If you're judged by titles, you do it. But then you only do it if you're in a position where you believe that that money you're giving up really will make a difference. So you have faith in the franchise. You have faith that you're close. All of that. In which case, like Tom Brady did, seemed to work out for him.
I think it's a huge part of the story for the Pats. And then, by the way, he stopped doing it, and guess what happened?
They didn't win. And then Bill Belichick ended up in North Carolina with a canceled Hulu documentary.
I know. I know you were clamoring for that.
Taylor Swift, by the way, says the reason she's not going to do the Super Bowl halftime, she's too locked in on football. It's also, weirdly enough, the reason I'm not going to do the Super Bowl same. Halftime. We're in the same place on that one. What's coming up next on 92.9?
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Rob Doster is going to join their program today. Coach Hurd will also be with them. He will join me as well. Jason Munz is going to join us at 2:40 as well on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Cobb will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Have a great day, everyone. Hey, watch your mentals. Check in on your mentals. Take care of your mentals. We'll be back tomorrow for Now Work Is Done.